Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions came home after visiting Kansas City in week one to a raucous environment, and would you agree with me, at times electric, an electric crowd.
Yeah. They kept putting the decibel noise meter up on the big Jumbotron, and I think the highest I saw it go was 122, but the reports are down on the field it got as high as 127 and change. So that's a new record for Ford Field, and it was definitely loud.
And even with all that loud crowd noise, the Lions couldn't hold off the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle won in overtime 37-31. A lot to go over in that game. You and I both had the pleasure of being at Ford Field. That's, I think, first time ever. You and I shared Ford Field together, although we did not sit together. You somehow found me from the press box once I told you where I was.
Yeah, you were only like two sections over. So, like,
yeah, that's what I figured.
It wasn't hard to find at all.
And it wild game. You know, they were leading most of the way, well into the third quarter, and then then tides turn. You know, Seattle took that 10-point lead. You could feel the deflation starting. And, you know, they made the nice comeback. You know, there's a lot of questions about, you know, whether they made the right decisions at the right times. We'll talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And once they lost that coin toss, it wasn't dead man walking. I think everybody was still trying to be a little bit hopeful. But, like, once Seattle started moving the ball down the field, like, oh, that's it.
Yeah, it definitely was. It got to a point where you're like, just hold them to a field goal and see if you can extend it a little
Get
further.
Get back out on the field, yep.
And
take the field again.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to complain about the refs or, you know, the obvious holding call, because those things happen. They happen. Mm-hmm. But we knew going in that this referee crew was flag happy, and we knew they were going to throw a lot, and they were going to throw weird ones and ones that didn't make sense, and they did. They had dead other penalties during the game that didn't make sense, and so you can't leave it up to them, right? You can't let them, you know, I don't know. It's always with certain crews, there's always going to be stuff to complain about. And I think that this is just one of them.
Yeah. So another thing we want to complain about with this game is there's like some long-term effects coming out of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Forget, you know, the opening season home loss. You and I could actually go back and forth, and it would be like, well, where would you expect the Lions to be after two games so far mm-hmm. this year? You'd say 1-1. They mm-hmm. lose in Kansas City, right. They beat Seattle at home, and it was mm-hmm. just the opposite of that. So they're kind of still in the same boat where we thought they'd be. It does stink though that was such a great crowd, and they kind mm-hmm. of squandered the crowd. You know,
yeah.
It's no good. I guess I wanted to bring that up before we really dug into anything.
Well, you know, I think the reaction from the fans after the fact, and again, I'm basing a lot of this off just social media where I interact with people, but the general consensus is there's a lot of people jumping ship, right?
These people have felt a lot of pain in their lives.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And it's interesting because, like, even Dan Campbell projected this. He said, if we beat Kansas City in week one, we're not going to be able to lose another game, because if we do, everyone's going to think the sky is falling. And that's literally what happened, right? Mm-hmm. So they made one mistake here. Look, they lost in overtime as well. Like, it wasn't even like they got completely blown out and embarrassed. Like, yes, they had struggles. Yes, they ran into problems. Yes, there were parts of their game that were bad. But we've talked about how this is, you know, this happens in September every year. And I just think there's a bit of an overreaction to people thinking that this team is like all of a sudden needs to blow things up and like start over. Like, everybody just needs to take a breath. Right,
yeah, we're a long way away from that.
Yeah, like it's a long season.
Things change from week to week in the NFL.
Right, exactly. You're 1-1, and you've gotten two games that you had against two teams that were in the playoffs last year out of the way.
And look to be playoff teams again this year.
Right. And so you're moving forward. You're going to take on Atlanta this week. And Atlanta has some scary things that about them. And they're 2-0. And but the thing is that I think they're a better team than Atlanta. And so they're going to need to. But the question is, can they show it? And they are dealing with some, like you said, some fallout from the game, most notably the injuries. And they're not only like losing guys possibly for this upcoming game, but they've lost guys for the season to IR or potentially the season. So it's there's a definitely an aura of negativity and frustration in Detroit right now. But if you can get a win against the Falcons, things will turn around pretty quick. I think
start turning back around. So talked about the fallout from the game. That's where we'll start. Injured reserve CJ Gardner-Johnson, who tore his Achilles.
Pectoral. No,
oh,
pectoral.
That's right. Yeah, what am I saying? Yeah, he tore it. Yeah. I'm still thinking about
Well, it's Tracy. Yeah, Tracy's going to be his replacement. Tracy tore his Achilles. Yeah, that's where you're putting Achilles it together. Too. Yep.
And I'm still thinking about Rodgers, and I'm thinking about Nick Chubb. I'm just thinking about all the injuries over the last few days. Anyhow, yeah, CJ Gardner-Johnson tore his pectoral real early in the game. They said, like the second play or whatever it happened. And
oh, yeah.
He still played 70 of 72 plays, but he'll be on the shelf likely for the season. But they say sometimes they can come back faster than that, right?
Yeah, his injury was clean, which means there's not a lot of like multiple areas to repair. It's just put the sewing stitch right back in a straight line, and recovery process is faster that way. And so can he come back by the end of the season? It's definitely on the table as a possibility. At the same time, maybe not. So we'll see how that goes.
James Houston fractured his ankle. He's out for a long time as well.
It's interesting, like, because Campbell called it a fibula, right? So it's maybe not the ankle, but above the ankle, right?
Into
the
bone itself. Yeah, that's still in the ankle region.
Right. And so the reason I point it out is because an ankle carries like a 6 to 8 week recovery process. But fibula carries like an 8 to 12 week recovery process. And so I tend to think that, and from what Campbell has said, it seems like it might be a little bit longer than that 6 to 8 week original diagnosis, because Campbell's talking about Houston maybe not returning this season as well. And he's saying it's possible to get him back, but he also might not. And that I think is more conducive of maybe breaking it a little bit higher on the leg. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, they progress from there. You know, for Gardner Johnson getting injured, they have a starter, a guy who was starting last year as his replacement. So it's not that's a good replacement level player to have. And then at the same time, you've also got James Houston coming in, and he's Houston's probably going to be replaced by Romeo, right? So Romeo can play a couple different spots at that edge position. Add in the fact that Josh Pascal also went on IR ahead of the game, as did Khalil Dorsey. And so like your edge position has all of a sudden gotten a little bit slimmer, right? You started with 7, Julian ends up on IR, now Pascal, then Houston, and they still have 4 guys, so they're still fine as far as depth on the edge. But at the same time, they utilize their edge guys so much, it'd be nice to have a little bit more depth. So yeah, 4 guys on IR. To counter that, they've had to add some guys from the practice squad. So they've elevated 3 guys from the practice squad. Zonovan Knight, the running back who was with the Jets last year. Kayode Osika, who is was elevated from the practice squad for the game, and then Chase Lucas, who was signed to the roster before the game as well, and they still have an open spot remaining, so they can still make another move. Like, so for example, if they feel like they don't have enough edge depth, then they may end up looking at a guy like Raymond Johnson, who's been on their practice squad for since the cutdowns. And so we don't know exactly what they're going to do with that. They've already, like I said, elevated a few other guys. I think they're going to kind of feel out where they are on the injury report, because if they're missing a different position that they feel they may need depth at, they may end up signing a different guy. But for now, working through a handful of roster changes over the last 5 days.
All right. So then let's go to the injury report itself. Big one, running back David Montgomery with the thigh injury. Did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah. So Campbell kind of prefaced everything by saying, with regards to the injury report, that because they have a short week next week, because they play the Packers on Thursday next week, that some of the guys' injuries are at a point where if they pushed it and tried to play on Sunday, they might not have enough time to recover before Thursday's game. And so from an injury standpoint, instead of like having them at like not full capacity for this Sunday, they may rest them in order to have them at full capacity come Thursday against the Packers. And so a couple of these guys are going to be like that. That's kind of what they're trying to figure out this week. Montgomery being one of them. The fact that they signed Zonovan Knight is a pretty good indicator that Montgomery is probably not going to play this week, if I had to guess.
Wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, toe injury, did not practice Wednesday, limited Thursday.
It seems like he's trending in the right direction. He should, the fact that he's already back after missing just one day is a good sign. I know since you were at the game, you might not have rewatched the game or heard what they were talking about on the broadcast, but essentially they had identified the fact that St. Brown was getting something put into his shoe, which they were assuming was like a steel plate, which is something you do with the turf toe injury. Campbell didn't really confirm or deny it, but that's kind of the speculation, is that he kind of got like a turf toe injury.
Wide receiver Josh Reynolds, groin injury, limited Wednesday, Thursday.
So again, limited is good in this situation. The fact that he's still practicing is encouraging. So even though both, starting outside wide receivers, the guys who play the most are on the injury report, chances are both of them are going to be good to go.
Wide receiver Antoine Green, concussion protocol. He was full practice Wednesday, off Thursday.
Yeah, so he's completely off the injury report now. Basically, if you recall, he was removed from the game for a concussion. They checked him. He had to have passed it on the spot in order to have the protocol that he's in right now, which is essentially he's got to go through practice. He's still technically under the protocol until he clears practice. He cleared practice with a full practice on Wednesday, and so now they can remove him off the injury report after that. So anytime a guy gets pulled from the game and gets checked for a concussion, there's the follow-up for that is always going to be he has to be rechecked again the following practice, regardless of if he clears on the spot or not. If you're pulled, you're going to go through this check on Wednesday like Antoine Green did.
Left tackle Taylor Decker, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Now, the encouraging sign with him is that he was working with trainers on Thursday. So it's possible he's on his way back. At the same time, those words that Campbell said about possibly like re-injuring, yourself if you play and then not being available for the Packers game, I wonder if Decker was a guy who, maybe falls into that category.
Center Frank Ragnow, toe injury, full on Wednesday, rest on Thursday.
Pretty standard, right? They're going to give him a rest day every week. This week it happens to fall on a Thursday, but he's going to be on the injury report from now on.
Right guard Hal Vitae, knee injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Chances are he's probably not going to play. They're going to turn to Graham, who is, again, another starter-level player who literally started all of his career up until this year. And so he's going to come in, and he'll probably get the start.
Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, knee hamstring, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
So he's on his way recovering from his ACL injury when he pulls his hamstring, and then he hasn't practiced in five practices since. So unfortunately, he's the status on him is just a big unknown.
Safety Kirby Joseph, hip injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Like Decker, he was with trainers on Thursday, so he can possibly return with a practice on Friday. If he doesn't, the Lions only have two corners on the roster, or I'm sorry, two safeties on the roster in Tracy Walker and Ife Melifonwu. So that could be like, uh-oh, we need to sign Brandon Joseph off the practice squad to give ourselves another guy if Kirby can't go. And so training, working with trainers is a good sign, but he is a bit of a question mark.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about the Seahawks game. Starting on the offensive side of the ball, Jared Goff, who had his interceptionless streak snapped at the wrong time, threw a pick six that put Seattle ahead in the ball game at that point. And although he had a very good day overall, 28 to 35, 323 through the air, three touchdowns with that lone pick. So he's hitting on 80% of his passes. And for the most part, looked really good.
Yeah, and statistically he's shining as well, right? Like his PFF grade is top four for quarterbacks. His big time throws are at like 8.1%, which is amongst the top in the league. His yards per attempt is 8.2 yards per attempt, which is second in the NFL right now. I mean, he has a passer rating of 109, which is again way up there, and I think top three. So statistically, he's hitting on a lot of efficiency markers, right? And he's leaning on St. Brown and Josh Reynolds for that. That's why I think getting those two back would be very significant in being able to keep the offense humming. If it's not them, then Sam Laporta, I think, is the guy who has really kind of stepped up. Second week in a row, Laporta's is one of the, I think he's the first, the stat that Ryan Matthews at Pride of Detroit pulled up was he was the first tight end in NFL history to have five receptions within his first, five or more receptions in his first two games. Actually, that might've been Lions PR that had that. Ryan had a bunch of these good PFF stats that I am leaning on for this game. But Laporta is, I think, playing well. I thought he continues to be a really reliable outlet. And I think he had a nice game, and this is another opportunity for him against the Falcons to really shine.
Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. When it came to, Geno Smith played a great game, 32 of 41, 328 yards passing, two TDs, the game winner. He picked apart the Lions basically on the sidelines, whether it be short sideline throws, medium sideline throws. And then late in the game, when the Lions started clamping down on the outside, he started hit right over the middle. One of the big problems the Lions had is they weren't able to generate much of a pass rush throughout the entire game. They did have the one great sack, when they absolutely needed to stop them. Geno almost took a safety. They drove him all the way back to the goal line, and Anzalone had that sack, and that was due to the coverage. But, the Lions really struggled trying to rush the passer, which is surprising, especially with the fact that Seattle had reserve offensive tackles out on the edges.
Yeah, and I know fans are going to hate this, but I think that was almost purposeful because the way that their approach is, and I think the way it's going to be, I actually don't think they're going to change it, is when you are facing a quarterback that has mobility, the goal is going to be stop the run, contain the quarterback in the pocket, and then just start collapsing the pocket around the quarterback. Right now, what Campbell basically said was the defensive line is too slow to transition from stop the run to rush to pass rush, right? Because what they're not just teeing off and trying to go after them right now. They're engaging, looking for the run, and then transitioning into a pass rush. And that transition is taking too long. And it was noticeable. Geno had over 3 seconds to throw the ball on average every time. Right. And it was one of the higher ones in the league. And that's just because they weren't generating that switch. Right. Like they did a great job stopping the run again. Right. This is the second.
Only gave up 82 yards on 25 carries.
Right. And 20 of those were to Geno. And so like the backs themselves only got 62. So 45 yards to running backs in week one, 62 yards to running backs in week two. They're doing what they want, which is to stop the run, which was, you know, the biggest weakness in the team last year. The problem is that when they stop the run, the only defensive lineman that's getting home right now is Aiden Hutchinson. The rest of them are not. Hutchinson actually leads the NFL in pressures with 15 right now, according to PFF. But no one else is really doing anything other than stopping the run. And so they need to flip the switch. And right now they're not. And that's why the pass rush is so anemic. That's why they only have one sack. And it came from a linebacker on a coverage sack, right? So that is a sore point. And I think it's one of the things that's holding this team back. At the same time, I don't think it's going to change that much because they're achieving what they want, which is to stop the run first. If you get into a guy that's not mobile, like we will down, you know, as we get a little bit deeper into the season, I think they'll be able to pin their ears back a little bit more and really try and just straight pass rush. But right now it's been mobile quarterback, and another mobile quarterback this week. And so every time they face that mobile quarterback, I think this is going to be their game plan. And so I am anticipating another week of Lions fans being frustrated by the pass rush just not being there.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to there. Going into this Falcons game,
sorry to wet blanket that, but yeah.
All right, so let's start talking about the Falcons. The spread is currently Lions -3. They're playing at home. Don't forget, opened at 5.5 last week, and then into this week it went down to 4.5. Obviously, that's all this is due to all the Lions injuries that are piling up in all likelihood.
Yes. Yep.
Sunday, 1:00 on Fox. Don't get the Burkhardt Olsen team. We get Adam Amin, Mark Schlereth, and Christina Pink.
I think that team is off. I looked at the Fox schedule and I didn't see them on it. So maybe there's an afternoon. Maybe they're in the afternoon game.
They need Burkhardt for a baseball game. But I thought he only did like the pregame show. You know, like he was at the desk baseball game. That's not even the playoffs yet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Referee Carl Cheffers, what do you have to say about Carl?
So Cheffers is most well remembered for the hands to the face call a couple years back against the Packers. But right now he's way under the league average in flags, like 3.5 less than everybody else. That's great. If you can have a flagless game or, you know, a low number of penalties, I think that makes for more entertaining football for the home crowd.
All right. DVOA for the Falcons for this season. Now they start putting out the numbers. Mm-hmm. Overall is 14th. Last year, DVOA was 19th. Offense was 15th. Last year, it's 8th. Defense currently 14th, last year 31st, special teams 21st. I don't know. This to me still doesn't mean much yet. It's only 2 games.
Nope. Yeah, no, it is. It's still way too early. You really need about 4 weeks before they can even start weighting it properly. And so, it's basically one of the reasons why I included it this week was to lead into our next section, which is where we talk about the offseason additions, because that 31st ranked defense or 31st DVOA defense last year, they knew it was bad. And they heavily invested in starters in the offseason. They went out, they had money to spend, and they did. Now, remember, the Falcons were looking for both a GM and a head coach at the same time that the Lions were looking for Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell. And so they were in a very much a same situation that the Lions were, where they needed to clear a bunch of dead cap. They need to get rid of a lot of bad contracts, and then they needed to start over and build. Now, the teams were different in a lot of ways. At the same time, the paths have been kind of similar, where they're starting to, you know, the visions of the GM and head coach are starting to, you know, come to light, right? And we're starting to see the Falcons team that Arthur Smith wanted, you know, or envisioned a couple years ago. And then Fontenot is their GM, I believe. He was aggressive with his spending in free agency, and the upgrades that he made on defense are paying early dividends for him.
All right, so the additions on defense: Jesse Bates from Cincinnati, defensive tackle David Onyemata, linebacker Caden Ellis, defensive end Calais Campbell, outside linebacker Bud Dupree, starting corner Jeff Okuda.
projected starter. Anyways.
Starter for this Sunday. Yeah. And then they added a tight end to Jonnu Smith, but he's no Kyle Pitts.
No, but they run. So when we start breaking down their offense, they run two tight end sets. And so he's still technically starting with Pitts. You're going to see both of them a lot, both Pitts and Smith a lot. So all of those guys are starters, right? We're talking six defensive starters. So they replace over half of their defense in free agency or the trade market. And then they were more aggressive in the draft and trying to get younger.
All right. And so, yeah, speaking of the draft, they've taken round one running back Bijan Robinson, which, you know, many hope the Lions would end up taking. He's their number one back. In the second round, they took Matthew Bergeron, who's going to be starting on their offensive line on Sunday. Round three, they took Zach Harrison, who's not yet in the starting lineup. Round four, cornerback Clark Phillips the third, and, you know, he's a little bit buried on the depth chart, but that's, you know, those were the guys they led off with here.
Yep.
At draft time.
Yeah. And Bijan and Bergeron will both, like you said, both start. Bergeron's their left guard. Left guard was a weakness for them last year. So they went after Bergeron early in the second round in order to get a guy that they could upgrade at that position. And they've got a really nice offensive line because of it, right? Bergeron was a tackle I believe it was Syracuse, if my draft memory is there.
Serves you correctly. Syracuse.
Yeah. So he was a left tackle that I think a lot of people projected inside, and that's what the Falcons are doing with him. He's a good run blocker. He's a guy I thought would have fit with the Lions, and the Falcons, you know, they mirrored it. And so good for them. They got a really nice combination of starters on the offensive line and the offense in general. And that's a big reason why they're 2-0.
All right. Yeah. Those two wins, win in the opener against the Panthers, 24-10, week two win against the Packers, 25-24, close one. Both of the games were in Atlanta. This will be their first road contest.
It was a last minute field goal, to get that win over the Packers. Their kicker,
Younghoe Koo.
He connected twice down the stretch in order to get them the lead.
All right, let's talk about the Falcon offense. We'll start there. Quarterback Desmond Ridder in his second season. This is the first year, though, he is the full-time starter. Second-round draft pick. Right, he hasn't been great, but I don't know. I always kind of liked him in college, and they're giving him a chance to develop.
It's a slow burn, though. He's still a guy that I don't think they trust a whole lot. Decision-making is a little bit inconsistent. Ball placement and accuracy overall is a little bit inconsistent as well. I don't think the trust level is quite there. But again, with a run first offense, like the Falcons have now, see, so they're run first, hard nose. Like I said earlier, they run two tight ends most of the time. So, they'll run one, running back sets or two running back sets that run two or three tight ends, they rarely go more than two receivers, right? It's typically two receivers, and then the other three spots are filled by tight ends and running backs, just depending on what they want to accomplish. And sometimes it's just one receiver, right? So it's much more old school, and they like to be able to lean on those tight ends. And with Ritter, he's got a lot of weapons, but he's not making a lot of noise with those weapons. And none of them are really like standing out. He's more or less just distributing the ball to a variety of different areas. And I don't think they have a receiver, pass catcher, tight end, running back, wide receiver that's caught more than 67 yards in a game this season. So nobody's really like dominating, even though they have really talented to skill players. And I think part of that is because of the inconsistencies that Desmond Ridder has. Like if you look at the box score, it looks good. The box score says Ridder is a good quarterback, but when you watch him play, you can tell that he doesn't look comfortable right now.
All right. So the running back position, where the Falcons are quite comfortable, is the starter Bijan Robinson, and Tyler Allgeier is the change of pace back. Although Allgeier's had more carries throughout the year, 31-29, than Robinson. Mm-hmm. Robinson's obviously the home run hitter in the future, star skill position player of the Falcons, but it's a good backfield. They got a good pair of backs. They also have Cordero Patterson, although he's a little injured, but he was another guy that was an interesting weapon for the Falcons in the past. And
yeah,
he's not really there yet this season. I don't even think he's played.
No, he's got a thigh injury, and he's kind of, they're not sure if he's even going to play in this game either, but honestly, it doesn't really matter. Because the two backs that they have are both, like I said, starter level backs. Last year, Allgeier went for over 1,000 yards on the ground. He had the most touches and most yards in week one, whereas Robinson led the way in week two. They as a group ran the ball 26 times in week one for 130 yards. But in week two, they ran a ball 45 times. 45. 211 yards, 124 of those were Bijan's. As a team, they averaged 4.8 yards a carry, which is very respectable. Top 10, obviously, for sure. And they can catch the ball out of the backfield as well, because Bijan's, you know, I think he's got like 20. The first game was close to 25. Second game was close to 50. So he can catch out of the backfield as well. That's why he's the complete back. But it's a hot hand type situation. If one guy starts to find the rhythm, then Arthur Smith will lean on that guy a little bit more. But they are going to run the ball 30 times at a minimum, I would say, again, and try and really control the clock against Detroit.
Wide receivers. Drake London, Mac Hollins, Scott Miller, those would be their top three. Have X-Lion, Kadarrell Hodge over on the bench, Josh Ali. Those are the five guys. London was a first-round draft pick, I believe, last year.
Yep.
Hasn't made that big of an impact this year. Had a good season last year.
Hollis is the guy that they were hoping to – that can really, like, complete the offense, right? Like, he's a veteran receiver. He actually had a touchdown call back, and they're a guy that if you talk to Falcons writers that they think is a really good fit with the team. London last week, they had 82 snaps. London played 67 of them. Hollins played 58 of them. So they're playing like 70%, 75% of snaps. And then the reserves, they only played like 10 snaps each or something like that. It's not that much. Like I said, they lean on two wide receivers, London and Hollins, are the guys that are pretty much out there the majority of the time. So yeah, look for London's the tough one. He's that first round pick. He's a big body. He's a handful.
All right, tight end group: Kyle Pitts, Jonnu Smith. You know, all fantasy owners out there are aware of Kyle Pitts, high traffic, hasn't really, you know, hasn't had gone nuts yet. And Jonnu Smith, we talked about him shortly a little while ago, the free agent pickup.
Yeah, and Smith's a guy they traded for from the Patriots. Like, he was a guy who Belichick really loved and tried to, you know, made a point to bring in a couple years ago, and then they went in a different direction. And so Pitts is the guy, though, right? Like, Pitts was, as a rookie, went over 1,000 yards receiving, shortened season last year going on IR, and then this year he only has 4 catches for 59 yards through 2 games. Like, that's, he's just way being underutilized. And it seems like he's going to break out at some point, right? Like, he just has to. And considering the Lions have allowed 175 yards to tight ends through 2 games, this could be the week, right? This is the week, right, where you have to really watch out for Pitts, because if you're selling out to stop the run and they leak Pitts out, you have to have an answer for it. And if Ridder isn't, you know, going to, you know, get on track, it's the tight end tight end's an easy target to help him get on track. So that combination of Ridder being able to leak out or being able to get that ball out to Pitts is something the Lions are really going to have an answer for, because, like I said, they're going to be selling out to stop the run because their backs are so good.
All right. Offensive line, left to right: Jake Matthews, Matthew Bergeron, Drew Dahlman, Chris Lindstrom, and Caleb McGarry at right tackle.
It's a good group, right? Like, Lindstrom was a guy who got paid over the offseason, kind of set the market for guards. Dahlman is, I think, is a slightly above average center, but who's been playing even above some of the best he's ever played this season so far. So he's playing really high. Bergeron, like we just talked about, he's a rookie. He's good. He's going to be good. But he's a rookie, so he makes rookie mistakes right now. But still, he's going to be good down the road. Matthews is a veteran who's been pretty steady for a while. And McGarry, he's real good sometimes, and then he has his moments as well where he's not. But again, overall, 5 pretty good guys, all above average guys, in my opinion. And there are some weaknesses, but they're run first and all good run blockers. And then that's really what makes the offense tick, is this combination of 5 solid offensive linemen that are all good in one area. And then you have a supporting cast of skill players to support that. And away they go. They are one of the better rushing offenses in the league.
They run the ball 60% of the time, and they're 2-0 while doing it. Mm-hmm. So very old school in their approach, although they have a very modern offense, but an old school approach to how to play football and how to win games. And they've done it so far.
Mm-hmm.
Flip it over to the Falcon defense. They have a base 3-4 on the front line: Calais Campbell, David Onyemata, and Grady Jarrett along the front line.
So it gets a little tricky because they kind of run this hybrid front that, like, you're starting to see a lot of teams run. And so when they're in their base, you're going to use like 3 down linemen. And then you're sometimes going to bring down a stand up outside linebacker. And that gives you like a 4-man front look. At the same time, they, like the Lions, they also have in their wheelhouse the 5-man front look, where you bring 2 outside linebackers and then the 3 down linemen as well, which is more reminiscent of like that 3-4 style that I think most people consider them. So they kind of fluctuate between, in my opinion, I would call them more like a 4-2-5 or like a 5-2 and then a 5-2-4 that's what they do in their back pocket. At the same time, it runs kind of like a 3-4 at times, but it also runs like a 4-3 at times. So they do a combination of the two. So, look, Nielsen there is a brand new defensive coordinator, came from the Saints, was their defensive line coach with the Saints. He coached with Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn for 4 seasons. There are parts of his scheme that are going to be reminiscent of what of things that Aaron Glenn has done in Detroit in the past. Lots of man coverage, lots of blitzing, and they blitz their linebackers pretty aggressively. They're going to run more two high shells, whereas Glenn runs more single. But those two high shells with man coverage, blitzing linebackers, there's some vulnerability over the middle, which is, again, why I was kind of talking about Laporta possibly having another good game. This is another good opportunity for St. Brown as well. Last game, they were only in nickel 50% of the time. You know what I mean? Like, most defenses now are in nickel like 75-80% of the time. The Falcons will run their base with like a front seven, like a legit front seven, and a back four half the time. And if you play the Lions that way, you're going to get cooked by St. Brown and Laporta. So I think they're going to have to try and spend a little bit more time in nickel. If they don't, very, very advantageous for the Lions then. If they are not in nickel, then you're going to if they are in nickel, then they're not going to be putting necessarily their best players on the field, which is, I think, why they settle for just four defensive backs sometimes, because they don't have a great nickel outfit here. But they have good players in a lot of spots, questionable players in others. And then they have a couple like really high level defenders. But again, the mix of talent is kind of up and down, and there are vulnerabilities. In my opinion, this is a Laporta St. Brown type of game. And then of course the Lions are going to want to run the ball as well. And so we'll talk about that more as we get into it.
All right, second level, the linebacker group, Arnold Ebikite, Troy Anderson, Caden Ellis, and Bud Dupree.
So, again, you have, like, those outside linebackers of your the Penn State kid. I always pronounce his name wrong. You just said it great. Ebikite or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Ebikite, thank you. Him and Dupree. Him and Dupree are kind of like your pass-rushing outside linebackers, right? So sometimes you're going to have both those guys on the field at the same time. Other times you're just going to have one, and then Calais Campbell is going to be like your John Kaminsky, where he kicks from like the four eye out to like the six or something like that, right? So sometimes you're going to use those down linemen as one of the edge spots. Sometimes you're going to use both those outside linebackers at the edge, depending on the front that you want to, that they want to produce. They'll vary between them, just like the Lions kind of vary between their four and five man fronts as well. Inside, Ellis was their, he was their, another good free agent acquisition, both him and Onyemata. Those guys have really shown up front for them. Both guys were free agent acquisitions. Both guys are playing at high levels for them and really stepping up. So the other inside linebacker next to Ellis is Troy Anderson, but he's in concussion protocol. And while he maybe is working his way out, he's been in concussion protocol for a couple weeks now. Nate Landman has been his replacement. He's an average starter, an average contributor, undrafted guy a year ago. And so I think Anderson's the guy that they'd love to get back, but is he acclimated? Is he ready to give you a full complement of snaps? I'm not sure. And so I think the linebackers, with the aggressiveness that Nielsen calls blitzes, there are some, and then you're working with a couple injuries and a couple average players. There's some vulnerabilities there, and that's one of the areas I think I would try and attack.
Defensive secondary, starting with the corners, AJ Terrell, Jeff Okuda, and then D. Alford, Trey Flowers, Mike Hughes, another ex-Lion, Clark Phillips, yep, the third.
So Terrell is the, he's their stud. Like he's their first round pick from 2020. He is their guy that can kind of shut down part of the field. My guess is they're going to put him on Josh Reynolds and try and disrupt that Goff to Reynolds type combination. That would leave Alfred probably trying to handle St. Brown, which is a big advantage to the Lions. And then potentially Jeff Okuda, if they try and get Jeff on St. Brown. We've seen that matchup before, and that favors St. Brown as well. Okuda's coming off a foot injury. And so, I think
Okuda's going to play absolutely great in this game.
Oh, I think everyone is expecting it, both in Atlanta. And then, I think there's going to be a lot of people expecting a revenge game here locally as well. But, he's coming off an injury. And if he draws Marv, he might do all right. If he draws Khalif, it's going to be a problem for him, in my opinion. Trying to handle Khalif, it's not his style. He would do much better against Josh, but I don't think they're going to play Terrell on Khalif. I think they're going to play Terrell on Josh because he's their best corner up against their best outside receiver. And that's not the line. Okuda's going to match up well against Marv, but in my opinion, I'd get Raymond out on him. And if you can get Raymond or St. Brown out on him, you can take advantage of him. Because look, they know what he can do. They know what he can do. They know where his weaknesses are. And so if they want to try and play matchup football, there's an opportunity for them to try and do that and take advantage of a player that that they're very, very familiar with. Like I said, Alfred's the other nickel. He played half the snaps last game. He's average, in my opinion. I think they drafted Clark Phillips to be his replacement. I don't know when or if he will end up replacing him this year. If Okuda can't go, they'll turn to Trey Flowers. I don't think Trey Flowers is very good, in my opinion. Again, that's an area that I would try and exploit, whether it's Okuda or Flowers. Those are the guys that I would try and pick on because I think the Lions have a really good advantage with either St. Brown or Raymond against either of those two corners. I'm sorry. Did you, I didn't talk about safeties.
No, cause I didn't say who they were yet.
Okay, good. That's what I was wondering. I couldn't remember.
Richie Grant, Jesse Bates, III. We mentioned Bates as the free agent pickup. He is an excellent player with the Cincinnati Bengals. DeMarco Helms and Jalen Hawkins. Those are their safeties.
Mostly Bates and Grant are going to pretty much play the whole game. I'm not as sold on Grant, but Bates is, yeah, like you said, Bates is one of the better safeties in the NFL, and he's aggressive. He had an interception already this year. He makes plays on the ball. He reads things properly. And if the Lions are going to get caught over the middle, it's going to probably be because they drop Bates into like a robber position. And then they try and use him to try and disrupt that middle space where the Lions might attack, whether it's St. Brown or Laporta. Bates is the guy that they're going to have to account for and beat, which is not going to be easy because he might be their best defender. Like that's the level that I think he's at.
All right, kicking game. The kicker is Youngway Koo. The punter is Bradley Pinion. So you mentioned Koo's exploits against the Packers. He is 4 for 4 with a long of 39. He, won the game with seconds remaining for the Falcons. He's a pretty decent kicker. I've had him on as a fantasy guy. He's all right.
Pinion's real good.
Yeah, Pinion's an excellent punter. They haven't needed him too much so far. I'm looking for his stats right now. He's only punted, he punted 7 times in week 1. He punted once against the Packers, 149-yard punter. 145-yard punt, excuse me. He's a good punter, but he's never been to the Pro Bowl, never been at all pro. But solid kickoff man. It's a good pair of specialists there.
Mm-hmm. If Patterson plays, he'll probably be their kick returner. If not, it'll probably be Mike Hughes.
He's gotten the most punt returns and he's got the only kick return for the Falcons this season. So we'll have to keep our eye out for him.
Mm-hmm.
These old Lions peppered throughout the league.
Oh yeah.
Every week. All right. I think we covered the whole team.
Yeah.
What do we think about the game? What do we think is going to happen in this game?
The Falcons D has played better than I think they are, for a couple of reasons. One, they have kind of a similar approach, like I said, as to Glenn, where they're trying to stop the run first. They just do it in a little different ways, and they've been pretty efficient with that. But they've also faced Bryce Young in his first NFL start ever, and then Jordan Love, who was in his second NFL start ever. So it's not like they faced anyone that is at the level that Goff is playing at right now, right? Like, we talked about him at the top. The level that Goff is playing at right now is so much higher than what you're going to get out of early career Bryce Young or early career Jordan Love. They're just not there. And so you're catching Goff at a time where he's going to be a problem for you. Now, the injuries hurt the Lions, and they're going to hurt. The fortunate thing, the positive thing, is that the guys that they have replacing those injured players are actually not bad. A lot of former starters and high level draft picks. And so, yeah, the injuries hurt, but the Lions built a deep team to be able to withstand this. I don't think the Falcons D has been tested like what the Lions can do. And while I do think the Lions are going to have a hard time handling the Falcons offense, I think the Lions offense is going to be able to find their rhythm against the Falcons. And so I won last week, so I will pick first.
Mm-hmm.
And Falcons scored 24 points against the Panthers, scored 25 points against the Packers. So I'm going to give them 24 points again. I'm going to give the Falcons 24. Packers scored 24. I think the Lions are 6 points better than the Packers. So I'm going to give the Lions 30. So 30-24 Lions is my pick.
Oh boy, we're close again. There is concerns about this game because if the Lions can't generate a pass rush again, like that, you know, kind of negates the negative that Desmond Ridder brings to the table. Because if he's allowed to sit back there and just pick his way apart, you know, like, you know, he's going to look a lot better than he's looked in his, you know, the first six games of his career. Mm-hmm. And then, like you talked about, like they gave up 130 some yards to tight ends last week. So that just opens the door for, you know, a great Kyle Pitts game. But, you know, Hopefully Glenn and crew have looked at that and they've got to be concerned about what Pitts is going to bring to the table and make some adjustments, you know, based off of what they saw last week and what they anticipate the Falcons might try this week. Offensively, yeah, the Lions should score because even though they didn't look great against the Chiefs, they looked pretty good against the Seahawks. They had no trouble scoring and looked very similar to an offense that we saw last year, although depending on how many offensive linemen they have healthy. But even so, even with 17 different combinations or whatever that number was last season, they still were able to effectively move the ball from week to week. So I don't see that changing at all against the Falcons. I'm going to give the Lions the win in this one. I'll go 31-26.
Ooh.
You said they went 24 points, 25 points. Lions defense is worse than those other two defenses. So let's go 26 points.
Nice. All right. Good. We're close. You know, I think close is good. That means we kind of see it the same, a similar way anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And we might diverge after this week, depending on what happens on Sunday. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. I was just gonna say, I think it's a winnable game and it's an opportunity for them to get back on track. And we'll see what happens with all the people that jumped off the bandwagon, if they want to come back or not.
There's plenty of room for them. I don't know if they've necessarily jumped off it's all that pain. They've been scorned over the years. So like it's the smallest thing, you know, it's the smallest little, what they deem abuse, and they've got to go running, and that's fine. You know, like you shouldn't get too close, not until you know. You know, maybe Dan Campbell's got to go for that to happen. Although the stats back up all of his choices on fourth down, Like they don't have a little evaluation of what he did at the end of the game, settling for the field goal. Although one can, you know, say that like Goff's pass there that went to the feet of Amon-Ra St. Brown, that kind of screwed up the whole drive because they would have completed that throw. They would have a much better shot of being inside of the 20-yard line with 20-some seconds left and two timeouts.
Right. It
would have been totally different. But
yep,
nothing we could do about it now. And we'll see what he does this week to hopefully atone for what he did. So Apple Podcasts, we boost up another review. This one, a five-star from Veronica 808SC. Very nice. Mentioned football nerdiness in it, so that's always good to see. We're over 200 reviews on Spotify, so everybody who's been reviewing us and rating us, we appreciate it. Hopefully you keep it up. If you're new and you feel like, okay, give us a good review, you know, like we would appreciate it. And even if you don't, we thank you all for listening anyways. Do you have anything to add, Eric?
I will selfishly plug my Joe Costanza article.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing you did. It's an excellent article.
Thank you. I've been trying to get that interview for 3 years now, and the Lions wouldn't grant me it because they didn't want to give away any insider information, and they didn't want it was such, it was a new program for them, and they didn't want it to they didn't want anything getting out about what they were doing. And so we use the I ask every training camp to interview her because I've built a relationship with Jill over the years, and this time I was granted it, and they said, hey, if you can incorporate it as part of their Women in Football initiative that the Lions are doing. And I was excited to do it. I thought it was the best of both worlds for me because I get to interview a person I'd been trying to interview for multiple years. Plus I get to promote women in football, which is, you know, as a father of three daughters is something that's very near and dear to my heart. And so I was very excited to be able to do it. I worked with the Lions to get it done, to time it, when it was going to go out. I was a little worried that she would get blamed for all the injuries that the Lions are suffering.
Right.
But I tried.
Where I would go.
Well,
start blaming that staff, strength and conditioning, training staff, sports right. staff.
Well, that's what I was worried about. But like in all, I tried to like explain, like, look, this is the best analogy. She had a great analogy, which was that she's the hub of the wheel and she disseminates information through the different spokes to keep the wheel turning at its most efficient. And so like, I thought that was an excellent description of what she's doing. Like she's out there distributing information to try and help other people do their job as well as doing, you know, hands-on stuff as well. It's just, she's a fascinating person. Her job is fascinating. And this was a 3 year in the making interview for me. There was like 6,000 words. The transcription of my interview with her was like 6,000 words, and then trying to sort it and piece it together, it took a really long time. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. And so I encourage people to read it. I know readers typically like, you know, quick hitting fun stuff, but I tried to make this as entertaining and as interesting as possible. And I think like I said, a fascinating person. It's a good program that the Lions are running. And I think it's worth taking 10 minutes out of your time.
Yeah. You know, like you talk about everybody likes the short form, but you know, it's always good to dig into the long form. Everybody should get out of their comfort zone, read a little long form piece. Interesting. Her path to make it to the Lions. It's a good read. Yeah. And you kept me intrigued. You know, it wasn't a difficult read. I didn't have to slog my way through it. It was easy to get through, which is always a good thing, which means you did enough entertaining while you were writing it that you want to read about all the information that's in there. And you can't blame you can blame the training staff for years and years of, you know, injuries, but like Lions right now are just getting bitten in a way that every team gets bitten that they weren't bitten last year. Lions are really healthy on the injury front, not on the offensive, but even the offensive line would only be one guy here and there, and it ended up shuffling the line all year. But the Lions are very lucky with injuries last year, and this year, not so. So hopefully they can get healthy in a hurry, or at least get healthy enough. Every team's got to go through it. Let's see how they handle it, right?
Yep.
All right, that's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.